This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts. U.S. President Joe Biden has arrived in the Middle East for the first time since taking office. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Welcome to Israel, our brother Joseph.
The president was greeted in Tel Aviv by, among others, Israeli counterpart Isaac Herzog, before noting what he calls a stronger-than-ever relationship between the two nations.
Bone deep.
The president says he has a full agenda the next few days in a region full of challenges and opportunities.
Greater peace, greater stability, greater connection.
He did not mention one of the trip's biggest goals, assuring Israeli and Saudi officials that the U.S. remains committed to keeping Iran from becoming a nuclear power. His administration, though, is becoming increasingly pessimistic about resurrecting the deal to stop that from happening. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Leaders of the Group of Seven industrial nations have tentatively agreed to back a cap on the price of Russian oil, the main pillar of the Kremlin's financial revenue. The idea is to bring Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine to a halt while possibly lowering energy costs. Participants in the price cap plan would agree to purchase the oil at a lower-than-market price. Protesters continue in Sri Lanka, where acting President Ranil Wickremesinghe Wednesday declared a nationwide state of emergency and a curfew in the western province. The acting president also said Wednesday a committee comprising of the chief of defense staff, military commanders, and the inspector general of police has been appointed to control the situation in the nation after protesters took over the prime minister's office. This is VOA News. A spate of wildfires is scorching parts of Europe, with rescue crews battling blazes in Portugal, Spain, and southern France amid an unusual heat wave that authorities are linking to climate change. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
In Portugal, the civil protection say multiple fires have caused the evacuation of more than 600 people, with over 100 needing medical treatment. And more than 800 firefighters have battled the two wildfires in the region outside Bordeaux in southwest France. The European heatwave is also sparking flames in Spain and in Turkey at the other end of the Mediterranean. EU officials have recently warned climate change is behind the extremely dry and hot summer so far on the continent, urging local authorities to brace for wildfires. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Flooding and extreme high temperatures have caused multiple deaths in eastern China as summer heat descends earlier than usual. Record high temperatures have been reported in Zhejiang province, just east of the global business hub of Shanghai, topping out above 107 degrees. Two neighboring coastal provinces were also suffering under high heat, while three provinces further inland saw many hospitalized for heat stroke. Floods have also struck much of the country. China's exports are roaring back after pandemic shutdowns. The AP's Jennifer King reports.
For the first
antivirus controls that shut down the port city of Shanghai were lifted and shippers moved out a backload of cargo. Imports of cut-rate Russian oil and gas are up 56%, but China's imports are up only 1% overall from last year, reflecting a government effort to reduce debt that has hit the construction industry there and a global economy still weakened by the pandemic. Forecasters have cut estimates for China's economic growth to as low as 2% this year. In a report from Capital Economics, analyst Julian Evans Pritchard says exports rebounded strongly as shipping bottlenecks eased, but we think this may be the last hurrah for China's pandemic export boom before shipments drop back down on cooling demand. I'm Jennifer King.
If you'd like to know more about any of the stories we're covering today, please visit us at voanews.com or download our easy-to-use app. And recapping our top story, U.S. President Joe Biden has arrived in the Middle East for the first time since taking office. The president was greeted in Tel Aviv by, among others, his Israeli counterpart, Isaac Herzog, before noting what he calls a stronger-than-ever relationship between the two nations. From Washington, via remote, Diane Roberts, VOA News.
is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I think the international community hasn't to recognize the Said process in Tunisia because it's no legitimate process.
That was Sofiane Makhloufi, a member of parliament from Tunisia's Tahrir party, on President Kais Saied's effort to install a new constitution that critics say will further consolidate his power. Details coming up also. A former Rwandan official was sentenced to 20 years in jail in France. But first, our top story. Traffic has stalled at the Impandwe border post between Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo because truck drivers fear attacks by militias in the DRC. Over 100 trucks have lined up after an armed group cut off the road between Impandwe and the city of Beni. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Groups of young men who are thought to be a member of one of the rebel militias in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have been attacking travelers along major roads. There are reports they are waylaying buses and cargo trucks to loot merchandise. The latest incident was reported on Monday when a Ugandan truck was set ablaze, although the driver escaped unhurt. The trucks have been diverted to another route, but the truckers aren't willing to use it. Among those stuck at the Mpondwe Lubiriha border post in Uganda's Kasese district are about 15 Zambian drivers. Shivumbi Laston is one of them, and he says they have spent nearly a week at the border.
And we have been told that there's no other way you can go this side. Better you reroute, you go back to Kampala, and you use the Mahanji border to go to DRC. It's a process again to start processing the papers to go to other route, which is not good and cheap again. Now we have been here for some days otherwise, which is very, very expensive in short, because everything is buying. Water we are buying, food we are buying, toilets we are buying, and we are still stuck here.
More than 100 militias and rebel groups have been fighting in the Eastern DRC for more than 20 years. In the past few years, there has been a surge of attacks. Truck driver George Kanungo says the living conditions at Mpondwe border post are deplorable.
We are preferring going to the lodges where we are paying a lot of money just for us to access good sanitation and water. Because you can see the water these guys are bringing us. We cannot even drink that water. And we have been here almost a week. And you know, this is a place where we have come for the first time. We are coming from Zambia. It's really a very, very far place, you know. Coping up with in such an environment is quite a bit, difficult.
Henry Wambale is the chairperson of the Mpondwe business community. He says the insurgencies in the DRC put the lives of traders and truckers at risk. He says in the past 2 weeks, they recorded about 5 attacks on truckers along the DRC roads. He says truckers have resolved not to cross the border for their safety.
But as you may check alongside the border, there is a lot of traffic. There are trucks that are stranded, and I can presume that it is the same that is happening on the Congo side, because Congolese cannot cross over to Uganda, and Ugandans or Kenyans or Tanzanians, those who are supposed to take goods to Congo, cannot also cross.
Bwambale says the truckers will stay at the border until their security is guaranteed.
The business community in Congo, and I think a few members that are concerned, decided that there is a strike to make sure the government in Congo becomes answerable or gives them or assures them that there is enough security for the drivers and their goods to wherever they are going. Obviously, as the business community, we are also concerned about what is happening to our neighbors. We ask that our government, with the government of DRC, get in touch and see that that problem is solved.
Security heads from both Uganda and DRC have met to discuss a way forward. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Tunisian opposition lawmakers are in Paris to lobby against a controversial constitutional referendum taking place later this month, which they argue risks plunging the fragile Arab Spring democracy back into dictatorship. Lisa Bryan caught up with them in the French capital and has this report for VOA.
For years, Tunisia's bickering parties delivered gridlock in parliament and mounting public anger. So today, it's strange to see one-time political foes here in Paris united against one man, Tunisian President Kais Saied, and his new draft constitution.
I think the international community hasn't to recognize the Saied process in Tunisia because it's no legitimate process.
Sofiane Makhloufi is a member of parliament from Tunisia's Tayyar party, which once supported Kais Saied. That was before Tunisia's president dismissed his government, suspended parliament, and seized wide-ranging powers in July 2021. Now President Saied wants Tunisians to vote on a new draft constitution in a July 25th referendum. The United States and the European Union have called for an inclusive democratic process. One critic say that guided Tunisia's last 2014 constitution, but not this one. Even the legal expert behind the new charter has disavowed it, saying it's not what his committee originally drafted.
He didn't respect the constitution. He has been elected by that institution. I think everybody in the world and Tunisians must not recognize the legitimacy Saied is doing for himself.
In April, Makhloufi's Tayyar and four other opposition parties formed a new opposition alliance, the National Salvation Front. It's calling on Tunisians to boycott the referendum. The opposition alliance includes the Islamist-inspired El Nahda party that retains fading but still sizable popular support. Rita Dries is advisor to El Nahda's leader, Rashid Ghannouchi. He warns President Saied is bent on one-man rule and will ensure the constitution is passed one way or another. Also part of the alliance is El Nahda's one staunch enemy, the Kalb Tunis or Heart of Tunisia party. Lawmaker Oussama Khlifi says his party is calling for national unity as the only way to save Tunisia. The tiny North African country has faced a rocky ride toward democracy since its 2011 revolution that kicked off the wider Arab Spring revolt. Tunisia's economy has stumbled and politics have been marred by paralysis and corruption. Many Tunisians hailed Saied's unlikely presidential win in 2019. They cheered when the former law professor seized wide-ranging powers last year. But today, public support is fading and disenchantment growing as the country battles a mounting economic crisis. Experts predict low voter turnout for this upcoming referendum. For his part, President Saied denies authoritarian goals and says he's committed to political freedoms. He sees this new draft constitution, which among other things strengthens presidential powers and waters down legislative ones, as a dysfunctional system. If the constitution is passed, the opposition fears more unrest and troubled times for Tunisia in the weeks and months ahead. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
While Ethiopia's civil war has not reached Addis Ababa, rights groups say authorities arbitrarily detained thousands of Tigrayans in the capital last year in waves of ethnically motivated arrests. VOA spoke to recently released Tigrayans about the conditions they endured. Henry Wilkins reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
With African Union headquarters based here, Addis Ababa appears as a modern international city, prompting some to call it the continent's diplomatic capital. But rights groups say tensions are boiling beneath the surface from Ethiopia's war with Tigrayan forces that saw thousands of Tigrayans last year arbitrarily arrested and abused, after the government accused some Tigrayans in the capital of being undercover agents. VOA spoke to a Tigrayan man who shared his experience on the condition of anonymity for fear of political retaliation. He said he was released in February after being jailed in the capital for 3 months in a makeshift prison.
The police might have mood swings that you might get kicked. There are a lot of ways you are kicked. I personally also was kicked one day for doing nothing. I did nothing. I was about to take a shower. Guys were kicked a lot of times. They only need a reason to kick you.
Rights groups such as Amnesty International say ethnically motivated detentions increased days after the government declared a state of emergency in early November, following threats by Tigrayan forces to attack the city. Samur, who declined to give his full name, is one of the capital's many Tigrayan residents. He says he fled to Uganda in March after being held for nearly 3 months in a prison in Addis Ababa.
Astonishing, you know, to learn that there were kids with us there. I specifically remember this kid, he was in grade 7, barely began high school, you know, and he wasn't even born in Tigray. His father is a Tigrayan and his mother is not even Tigrayan.
In May, the death in custody of a Tigrayan general and a former commander in the African Union mission in Somalia, General Gebremedin Fikadu, sparked protests in the capital. Reuters reported in June at least 15,000 Tigrayans were detained between November and February, and that 17 died in custody, some after being taken from the capital to a prison in the town of Mizan Teferi. VOA spoke with another Tigrayan who withheld his name, who recalls the state of inmates transferred from the Mizan Teferi prison to his prison. He says at Mizan Teferi, 5 prisoners had to share 1 loaf of bread and 2 litres of water for 3 days, which is about 1 glass of water per person per day, he says. He adds that all were in terrible condition and were very hungry and thirsty. VOA could not independently verify the reported deaths and allegations of abuse while in custody. The state-funded human rights organisation Ethiopian Human Rights Commission claims all Tigrayans held arbitrarily in the capital have been released.
All the arrests, mass arrests that happened during that period are connected in relation particular to the state of emergency have ceased since the lifting of the state of emergency around February.
Ethiopia lifted its 6-month state of emergency in February, but the commission in late June confirmed reports that 9,000 Tigrayans are still being held in the town of Samara and called for their immediate release. Ethiopia's government did not respond to VOA's request for comment, but has in the past denied any ethnically motivated arrests or abuse of Tigrayans. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Ivory Coast has demanded Mali release 49 of its troops who were sent to support a UN peacekeeping mission but were arrested on arrival and branded as mercenaries. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako.
Ivory Coast has released a written statement demanding the immediate release of 49 soldiers who were arrested at Bamako's airport Sunday, claiming they were unjustly arrested. Mali's military government has called the soldiers mercenaries. The Ivorian statement also denies allegations by Mali's military government that the soldiers were armed and arrived in Mali without authorization, and says both Mali's Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Malian Army's Chief of Staff received copies of the soldiers' mission order. Both the UN mission in Mali and the Ivorian government's statements have said that the soldiers were sent to Mali as support for a UN mission contingent. The UN mission in Mali, MINUSMA, recently renewed its mandate, with Mali's UN representative voicing the government's refusal to allow the UN to carry out human rights investigations during a June 29th Security Council meeting. The UN has carried out a number of human rights investigations in Mali in recent years, including events that implicate the French army as well as Islamist militants. The UN sought access to the town of Mora in Mali, which was the site of what many witnesses said was a massacre by the Malian army working with Russian mercenaries. Witnesses say the alleged massacre was carried out over 5 days. The Malian government has continually denied access to the town of Mora, saying the government itself would carry out an investigation. The regional bloc, the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, which includes neighbor Ivory Coast, sanctioned Mali in January over delayed elections, but lifted sanctions this month after the government proposed a 2024 election plan. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Laurent Musibaruta, a former Rwandan official, was sentenced yesterday to 20 years in jail. He becomes the highest-ranking Rwandan to have faced trial in France over the 1994 genocide, in which an estimated 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus died. The French news agency AFP reports that a genocide survivors group welcomed the sentence. France has long been under pressure from activists to act against suspected Rwandan perpetrators who took refuge on French soil after the massacres. At the time, the French government had been a long-standing backer of the Hutu regime in power, something that has since caused decades of tension between the two countries. Laurent Musibaruta, a former prefect of the southern province of Gikongoro, persuaded thousands of people to take refuge in the Murambi Technical School by promising them food, water, and protection. Days later, tens of thousands of Tutsis were executed there in one of the genocide's bloodiest episodes. Remy Kamugira, a survivor of the Gikongoro killings, who traveled to France to testify in the trial, said the sentence against the 87-year-old should have been tougher. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The African Union and Economic Community of Central African States say the Republics of Congo's legislative and local elections were well organized and fair. Rossi Pioth reports from Brazzaville.
The African Union and the Economic Community of Central African States, or ECCAS, sent 50 observers from 26 African countries to observe voting in all 12 departments of the Republic of Congo. On Thursday, the observers released their findings, saying overall, Sunday's legislative and local elections were fair and efficiently run. Kwesi Awumezono, head of the African Union Observer Mission, said, however, there were some problems. He says, the report shows there has been an improvement from 2016 to 2022. But he says, the report also points out that there were anomalies, places where polling offices were not open on time, places where the delegates of the candidate were not present, places where the material was not distributed on time, which means that everything was not perfect, but overall everything went well. Gabriel Arcanjo Ferreira da Costa, who led the ECCAS mission, suggested that the Congo Electoral Administration to implement certain recommendations for the future. Da Costa says the Electoral Administration will have to reinforce the capacities of its agents to master international electoral procedures. He also suggested encouraging more women, youth and people with disabilities to participate in elections. The results of the election are expected in the coming days. For VOA News, I'm Rosie Piot in Brazzaville.
Southern European countries want NATO to address terrorist threats in North Africa. Anwar Boukras, professor of counterterrorism and countering violent extremism at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, says the situation is complicated with the redeployment of European forces, which he says constitutes a major strategic change not only for Southern Europe but for African migrants. Boukras tells VOA's Carol Van Damme it's not realistic to think the deployment of Russian mercenaries will be able to secure territory in northern Mali and the Sahel, where a militant insurgency has been on the rise.
They have the capability to monitor their borders and to protect, obviously, their territory better than most. But there are still fragile states in there, as you know. There's Libya, which is extremely fragile. There is Mauritania as well, and Tunisia to some extent here, right? So there are risks. There's no doubt about it for the Maghreb, North Africa, and by extension, Europe as well.
These numerous groups, including Islamist militant groups, as you've pointed out, have taken advantage of the Mali government's inability to assert control over territory in the north by continuously asserting territorial claims and attacking government forces and international security forces that have been stationed there now. Have these attacks and threats destabilized the neighboring countries too? And if so, how does that impact the whole relationship with North Africa and European countries?
To be fair, the destabilization of the region, started before the coup, right, and before the deployment of Russian forces. But nonetheless, the threat has deteriorated. It has has become worse since the coup. So there are risks, as I said. One of them is if you look at the mercenaries that have deployed there, and by this I mean Wagner. A portion of these mercenaries, if we believe the reports we are reading here, are Syrians more than just Russian, operatives. And the risk here is that Mali, northern Mali and other parts of the country might become again, a rare base for, violent extremist groups that might strike at North Africa, not just at the western part and West Africa. So there is that risk. There is that scenario here, right? Especially if we trust the reports, Libyans that are now fighting in Mali, and again, if we trust the report that there are Syrians and others. So there are risks. So even if the French recently in the recent months, they have neutralized, several leaders of these violent extremist groups that have originated with them from Algeria, from Mauritania, from the Western Sahara and from Tunisia here. Most famous of which, as you know, is Abdelmalek Droukdil of AQIM, Qaid in the Islamic Maghreb, and Adnan Abu Wail al-Sahrawi of the so-called Islamic State in the Greater Sahara. So Libya is or could be at risk. And if
all these countries that you're mentioning seem to be at risk and destabilized in some parts of the country, at least, or others. Yeah. Italy and Spain in particular in southern Europe are urging NATO to do something about it. And of course, NATO is right now very transfixed on Russia's war in Ukraine, and that's had its impact too on Africa. Do you think NATO is ready to do something, is ready to act on these terrorist threats from Africa?
It depends what can be done. And most importantly, we have to see what the lessons that have been learned. And if you want to implement a counterterrorism strategy, we have to identify the shortcomings. We have to, to assess the practices and security arrangements here. So there has to be a holistic approach to it, not just a military approach.
That was Anwar Boukras of the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, who just returned to Washington after leading a four-day seminar on violent extremism for the African Union Commission and the 15-member African Peace and Security Council in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC right